Hello, my name is Nicholas Morgan. I'm an editor at Aval News, and this is Turkey Abroad. Joining me today is Dr. Aaron Stein. He is the director of research at the Foreign Policy Research Institute in Philadelphia. Aaron, great to have you.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So, of course, we're always hearing about the new developments when it comes to Turkey buying the S-400 and how do they get out of the sanction conundrum. And, we have the Biden administration now about little over a month into office, and his main cabinet members are sworn in for at least the Pentagon and a foggy bottom. And on Turkey, we saw a few levels of accusation trading in the last month or so, whether it was on the situation with the failed hostage rescue mission, or of course the statements over human rights in over the student protests in Turkey. And of course, we had the first contact between Secretary of State Blinken and National Security Advisor Sullivan with their Turkish counterparts. But the exception has been at on the defense level, where Hulusi Akar, the Turkish Minister of Defense, he was saying in a recent interview with Sabah that he's been trying to get in touch with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, but to put it frankly, his phone calls haven't been returned. And on top of this, he did mention in that interview that Washington has maintained its what he considered a really strict stance when it comes to the S-400. It is almost like saying the Biden team is signaling, fix the S-400 first, and then we'll talk. What is your take on this, and how do you interpret this all?
Well, I do think at this point, one of the things that we have to consider is that the Biden team is still coming together. There are still a lot of people who haven't been confirmed. There are still some senior positions that aren't filled yet. And so that, while there's a tendency to want to move at the speed of to move at the speed of Twitter, is that the government bureaucracy sometimes moves a little bit slowly. Now, with that said, it's very clear from the outset is that the Biden team has come in and has sought to reset the terms of the U.S.-Turkish relationship from where it was under the Trump administration. In many ways, I think this is working against Ankara because of the close relationship that Erdogan and Trump had carved out for themselves, seemed to imbibe the relationship, and in a way it became so personal to the two men. Whereas the broader relationship was deteriorating under the weight of conflicting interests. And the main driver of that, well, there's two. The first was on Syria, and the second was on this S-400. And towards the tail end of the Trump administration, as you saw, the imposition of the CATSA sanctions after Turkey tested the S-400 in late October. And you've seen a continuation of that through the Biden administration. And they've essentially doubled down on what Congress has mandated in US law, which is that the sanctions for the S-400 cannot be lifted unless the system is basically packed up and shipped out of Turkey, and that negotiations for the second regiment, which are, we don't quite know how they're going, don't come to fruition, and Turkey doesn't import the second regiment. So we're kind of where we're at. And if they want to redo it, if they want to reset the relationship, it does seem like it's an all or nothing thing coming from the Biden administration.
To that end, Turkey still seems to think that they can find another option around having to give up the S-400 completely, because they've been throwing around ideas pretty much the last few weeks on how to get rid of the sanctions without getting rid of the S-400. And one of them that they brought up, of course, was the creep model, which I want to ask you about a little later. But first, I want to just comment on how Akar, at least in that interview, he seemed to understand that the US was maintaining a very strong position when it came to the S-400. But what is the idea? What is all this idea chucking really meant to achieve to you? None of them, whether it's the Joint Technical Committee approach that they tried to suggest, or something through NATO, seems to be currently acceptable, at least to the United States, and something that really doesn't resolve the whole underlying Turkey possessing the S-400 problem. What is the point of throwing all these ideas around? Is it just looking for something to stick, or?
Well, I mean, if you're Akar, right, by all accounts, he's one of the the Turkish bureaucrats who wants to maintain cordial ties with the United States. And he has to be looking at this problem set as being this is the main impediment to at least his portfolio, which is the Ministry of Defense, which obviously oversees the Turkish Armed Forces, causing problems for all sorts of things. You know, it's very clear that the F-35 was going to was supposed to be the backbone of both Turkish naval and air force air power into the future. Now they don't have the F-35, and they don't have an answer to that. The other thing is that the often goes unacknowledged is that since Operation Peace Spring, the invasion of northeast Syria in October 2019, is that Congress has imposed a de facto arms embargo on Turkey. You know, so basic stuff like foreign military sales have been held up. You know, and obviously that's detrimental to the Turkish armed forces. And so he probably wants to fix this. But his problem is that his civilian government, I mean, he's ostensibly part of the civilian government, but I still think of him as a military man because of his background. His civilian government and his president has consummated the S-400 agreement with the Russians, and it sits there at Mertid Air Base all day, every day, causing this sort of issues. I think deep down, Akar probably never wanted the S-400, but he has it, and he's always trying to manage it. So they propose all these sorts of workarounds. They're non-starters for the United States. The technical working group that Ankara has proposed through NATO is it's a dead thing. It was always dead. It was never going to go anywhere. U.S. officials saw this as a way for Ankara to try and get out from underneath the pressure that the United States was pushing on them to not consummate the relationship with the Russians on the S-400. I think the U.S. assessment was correct. And now we've ended up in this position as they are advocating the Crete model. We can get into what that actually means later. But the Crete model is essentially that you're only going to use this thing in certain modes, essentially, at times of high crisis. That doesn't solve the main US problem, which is that you have the S-400 and that you purchase the S-400. You know, you purchased the S-400, and the consequences for that were running afoul of the Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Acts, which mandate the course of action that has since been taken. And the final point is that, as I always say, CATSA was never meant to sanction Turkey. CATSA is a sanction on Russia. Turkey was sanctioned because it did business with Russia.
Yeah, and of course, those sanctions were secondary sanctions to the initial ones against the Russian military industrial complex. And, you know, they were made to be, at least at the time, they were Trump proof, since Congress was worried about him doing a favor to Putin after the 2016 interference and everything. So, you know, these sanctions seem particularly sticky to really deal with, even on the secondary sanction spectrum.
True.
We also talked about the creep model briefly. So, you know, just to remind our listeners, the creep model is based on the situation that took place in the 1990s when Cyprus had purchased Russian S-300 missiles to defend their airspace, and Turkey threatened to attack them. And the compromise was that these missiles would be stationed and handed over to Greek control. One of our writers interviewed several analysts to talk about the possibility of the creep model being effective, and all of them were skeptical, and none of them thought it would resolve the problem. What are your thoughts here on the creep model?
Well, you know, the Crete model is an accident of history. You know, those missiles are only in Crete because Turkey threatened to bomb them in Cyprus. And so they ended up in Crete as a diplomatic compromise that the United States in part played in brokering to decrease tensions in the Eastern Mediterranean. You know, when that missile system was headed for Crete, a lot of the same problems that we would see later manifest themselves in concerns about the S-400 radar were also coming up. You know, because the British have a big air base on Cyprus, Akrotiri. You know, you fast forward here. Look, Turkey can't just give this thing back. You know, like in some respects, the American demands of Turkey are not realistic. Okay, they're going to have to do something with it, and the Trump compromise was, I call it the box it compromise, which is that you keep them in the box, you don't use them, and then we won't sanction you. That's not a bad starting point, Okay. And so the Crete model could be, I mean, but the Crete model doesn't satisfy that aspect of it because it's still in parts that the system would be used. You know, I think where there would be wiggle room is that the system may never be used, even if it doesn't leave, even if the system will never be used and it basically stays in storage for the entirety of its life, and the second regiment doesn't show up in Turkey. The thing that would that makes this even more problematic is to alter CATSA to be able to update the language that was most recently included in the most recent National Defense Authorization Act. Somebody from the Biden administration is going to have to march over to Congress, sit there in Congress, and make the case for Turkey. Who's making that case? And for on what grounds? You know, when there are Turkish politicians every single day at the high level accusing the United States of threatening to topple the government, and the relationship is so nasty, it's politically untenable to make that case. So I've always said Ankara has to do something, you know, and that doing something could be proposing the Boxit solution. But I also can understand the Turkish position in that we paid $2.5 billion. Actually, they didn't pay all that much more. They
Yeah,
will
was that Russian
eventually pay
loan?
too much. They got a Russian loan. They will eventually pay $2.5 billion. You know, you have to multiply that by what? 6.5 now in terms of the real purchasing cost from the depreciation of the lira. This is not something that's cheap. And so they're going, well, why would we put it in a box? We have to find a compromise. And so I'm afraid we're going to be locked into the status quo. But the status quo is very negative for Turkey. A, you have CATSA. B, you have the CATSA sanctions on their main procurement arm, SSB. They have been removed from the F-35, and you have the de facto arms embargo since October 2019. There are sequences that we can play with there, but the state of play is not very good around this.
And of course, as we mentioned too, that CATSA's original purpose was aimed at Russia. And of course, Russia has defended Turkey through this, at least rhetorically. And naturally, they want to see that their arms are going to be sold and, you know, ideally used, I presume. They don't want to see them just kind of like linger in the original packaging. And almost every one of my Russian contacts have insisted that really from Moscow, they don't really see Turkey, of course, as an unreliable partner. They see them as somebody they can make deals with in places like Syria or Libya. And of course, you know, Turkey does play that role for them of creating more divisions within NATO, at least in the last few years in their view. But do you think they're watching these negotiations and concerned in any way that Turkey might actually reach some compromise with the United States at the expense of, say, the S-400 or even follow-up military orders?
No, I mean, look, the Russians weren't stupid about this. Okay, this was a top-down political arrangement that came about between the negotiations of two men, Vladimir Putin and Recep Tayyip Erdogan. We can't say that for certain, but I would bet a lot of money on it. And the reasons why I say that is because the agreement was concluded behind doors. It was not an open competition. It was after the open competition had been shut, and Turkey had pursued bilateral negotiations with three vendors, one of which is the United States and Europe, but then ultimately came down to negotiations with Russia. The Russians agreed to rapidly provide them with the first S-400 regiment, which means that they took S-400s that were slotted for their own military. Basically took them off the supply line. They uploaded them with the export software, so not their indigenous software, the export software, which is normal, so it's a slightly dumbed down version. And then they rapidly sent it to Turkey, and they provided them financing. So the amount of money down that the Turks had to put forward was very little. Okay, and the interest rates are something like 2%. It's not very high. You know, and then what was left open was the negotiations for the second regiment, where the Turks had demanded something of technology transfer. By the way, this is exactly how the US and Turkey negotiate as well. You know, this is not some sort of outlier type of negotiations. The Russians even continent or, you know, or the Russians even considering some very mild technology transfer, far less than they would have gotten from the US, far less than they would have gotten from the Europeans, was also a concession on the Russian point. Now, why would the Russians do this? A, because the S-400 is a couple of years now old now. They're already beginning projects on the S-500. its armed forces have basically finished its procurement of the S-400, so it's at the end of its procurement stage for the own Russian armed forces. And three, it serves the broader geopolitical benefits of selling Russian kit to a NATO member. And that radar, or at least one of the radars that is associated with the S-400, is a very good electronic intelligence platform. And so there's all sorts of good stuff that like they could theoretically have access to. You know, I don't think they care now what happens for a number of reasons. One, the US has exploited an S-400. You know, we know a lot about the S-400. Two, the price the Turks paid for the S-400, the Russians built in a risk premium. The Turks paid a lot more for their S-400 than both the Chinese and the Indians. A lot of this stuff is opaque, but we can infer this stuff. So they built in risk premiums into the price of this that they sold the Turks. And three, now that it's there, right? What do they have to lose? We assume that there's like third plus. Again, Russian arms sales are opaque, but you have to assume that they have basic third-party end-user agreements. So the Turks can't like say, "Oh, we're going to turn around and upsell this to the United States." Like that's just not going to fly with their end-user obligations. And we also have to assume that the Turks can't just export it to a third country. But if they just box it, right? What the hell do the Russians care? And if they don't consummate the second regiment, that just means the Russians don't have to offset any even very, very marginal and inconsequential technology transfer to Ankara.
You know, for my last question, I wanted to actually comment on this really great piece. So you co-wrote with War on the Rocks that was talking about a possible solution lying in the example where you know, with the U.S. and Pakistan, where the U.S. took to Pakistan in putting on the ground technical teams in place to monitor how the exported F-16s that were being provided to Pakistan were being used there. Do you think the solution, though, do you think that there is a risk? What are the risks attached to this solution, though? For instance, you mentioned how the Russians might not be particularly comfortable, for instance, in one case, provide, say, selling their system to the US. So, you know, for example, having US technical teams on there possibly to get access to it is something that came to my mind. And then, of course, do you think that in any way it might, you know, in effect, even undermine the KATSA sanctions in any way, where you know, they received the system, they got some symbolic sanctions over it, but ultimately, you know, Turkey bet right that they were important enough not to sanction too hard. What do you think about some of these thoughts?
The piece that I wrote and I co-wrote it with my colleague at FBRI named Bob Hamilton, that was more, well, I'll back up. If you want to solve this, like it's not just two people in a room, it's three people in a room. It's not just Biden and Erdogan and their associated executive branches and the presidency in Turkey. It's also Congress. And as I was saying earlier, somebody's going to have to march over from the executive branch. And when Congress is debating the NDAA and drafting language, which they've already started, right? You're going to have to update that language to create wiggle room to lift KATSA sanctions. And so you're going to have to reassure them that Turkey has paid the price and that they aren't going to use the system. So it becomes an arms control problem. It becomes a verification problem. You can verify the non-deployment of the S-400 quite easily. You know, I have a beautiful picture of the S-400 that sits on my desktop that you can get from commercial satellites. It's wonderful. It's deployed. It's up in CNOP. It's great. And you have other ones that you can see at Lakunja, but you can also see that they're in storage. And so if Turkey declares the deployment site, we monitor the deployment site with commercial satellite imagery because that allows the governments to share it without classified issues, even though they're NATO partners. There's all sorts of classification issues because Turkey is not a member of Five Eyes. And you create some sort of mechanism to verify in person. Now, how you call that an on-site inspection, you call it a visitation, I don't care. That allows you to make the case. You know, the things I was talking about with the technical teams, that was, you know, if you get that, could there be a pathway towards Turkey ultimately buying F-35? And could you verify non-use of the S-400 with a technical team that looks at a number of data that you can download off the F-35 to see if it co-mingles with an S-400 radar, right? And it's arduous and it's annoying, but this is what you would have to do if you were thinking about this. Now, I don't think that there's a lot of likelihood of success for this, largely because I think the Turks are just going to say, no, thank you, right? We've offered the Crete model and we don't like this. This is far too intrusive. This is far too much of an infringement of on our national sovereignty. I am slightly encouraged is that I've seen some Turkish analysts make the same argument. I will say I was first, but just hearing there was a cadre of Turkish NATO ambassadors who made a similar pledge, made a similar policy proposal, which is this basically verify non-deployment of the S-400 in exchange for the waiving of CATSA sanctions. I do think that there are interim measures that the United States could do to reward good behavior. And that could be to lift the block, lift the de facto arms embargo. We do not care about the interaction of an F-16 and an S-400. You know, the F-16 is a 50-year-old platform. The Russians know a lot about the F-16. And so those could commingle. And we, as the United States, as Turkey struggles with its future fighter, don't want them buying a Su-34 or Su-57. We want them buying either an F-16 life extension, the Eurofighter, the F-18, maybe the F-35, whatever they want, so long as it's not Russian or Chinese. So, you know, allowing them to life extend some of their F-16s doesn't really cause any problems with the S-400. But again, you know, you're going to have to make the case. And so they have to give something. And so I do think that there may be some wiggle room on verifying non-deployment. But it's going to take the two parties sitting down and talking about it. And you know, even in Turkey, and I'll stop here, you know, after Akar proposed the Crete model, you know, Ibrahim Kalin said he misspoke. Like Ibrahim Kalin stepped in and overstepped him, right? So even in their own system, they may not have a good answer to this. And I don't think they do. I don't think in their own system they have an answer to this. I think they're still figuring it out. There is no good answer. They clearly want back in the F-35 consortium. They're spending ungodly amounts of money on lobbying to try and get back into the F-35 program, or at least to maintain their supplier contract for the F-35 program. It's not going to work. You know, they can give me half and I can tell them that. But like, it's just, we're at a stalemate until there is a move made to at least address the root of the problem, which is the S-400 sitting at the Kunjara base.
Aaron, there's always going to be something to come up with on this topic for with the S-400, and this is absolutely not going to be the last time we're going to hear a new development on this front. But I really do appreciate your time to talk about this tonight, and really do hope that you join again sometime soon to cover whatever transpires next there.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Fingers crossed, the decision makers are still reading your work if they're picking up on your ideas.
We'll see. It's up to them, not me. I'm just a nobody.
Well, I believe in your work, and I encourage them to read it if they're listening to this at this moment right now. We'll see. You'll know by your Twitter followers
We'll
if
see.
start going up.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Nicholas Morgan, and this is Turkey Abroad.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.